We're back. Tater Report, CIT, 89.5 FM, and we're joined by Stephen Gallas. Are you there?
I'm here, Phil. How are you?
Very well, thank you, and my apologies, we're a little late getting to you. We want to know, you've written a nice piece at gallas.wordpress.com analyzing this report that Qatar, through a law firm in London, thought it was important to see if they could get an objective study of whether or not crimes was committed by the Syrian government. And the Western press has been gobbling it up. You don't seem to be very impressed with it.
No, I don't. There are certain countries that you can say just about anything about and expect to be believed. Just to digress a bit, I mean, North Korea is a good example. Let me just tell you briefly a story about North Korea. You may know that recently some newspapers picked up a story that suggested that the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, had fed his uncle to the dogs.
Yes.
The New York Times reported on this. The New York Times hadn't been deceived, and deceived by what turned out to be a satirical report. But interestingly, in defending their journalistic brethren, the New York Times reporters said, oh, but the story was so plausible. And the same thing happens here with Syria. I mean, the Syrian government has been so thoroughly demonized that you can present just about any evidence of wrongdoing and expect it to be believed, whether the evidence is compelling or not. So in this case, we have a set of photographs which are supposed to provide visual corroboration that the Assad government is guilty of mass war crimes against its own citizens. But, you know, the newspapers report this and saying, well, you know, these things can't be independently verified, but we're going to report it anyway. The second reason to be skeptical about this is that the driving force behind the report is Qatar, which has been energetically engaged in efforts to bring down the Syrian government. And part of that effort has been to supply, you know, Syrian and foreign jihadists who themselves are the target of torture accusations with arms. And then there are reasons why the Qatari Emirate might have an interest in, you know, slandering the Syrian government with phony allegations. They might want to strengthen assertions that Assad must step down to prevent any deal at the Geneva II conference that might leave him in place. They might want to provide a pretext for direct intervention by Western military forces into the Syrian conflict. They may want to divert attention from, you know, the brutal war crimes carried out by the insurgents that include, you know, mass executions, beheadings, eviscerations, and these are now under investigation by the United Nations Human Rights Commission. You can't be sure that Qatar financing these torture allegations report is the stratagem that they've rolled out to gain the upper hand in the Syrian conflict. But, you know, as the New York Times acknowledged in an understatement, the funding of the project by one of the insurgents' principal backers is likely to raise questions, and it does.
It turned out it did. Steve Gowans questioned it, but everybody else... it was Showtime. By the way, were you notice who they chose to be the front for this? Three former prosecutors at international criminal courts.
Yeah.
One of them being Mr. Crane of the U.S. Army intelligence for 30 years. Someone named Sir Osmond de Silva. Desmond de Silva, I'm sorry, Mr. de Silva. And then there is a Sir Geoffrey Nice. And one was for Yugoslavia, one was Sierra Leone, and the other was Liberia. And they were the prosecutors.
Yes. I mean, these guys have no legitimacy.
I mean, I laugh when I read it. I mean, it's...
But what's interesting here is Amnesty International took this up, too, and said, well, you know, you can't confirm this independently, but it seems like the kind of thing that the Syrian government is like the North Korean case, you know.
This corroborates our previous wild accusations.
Yeah. So my son recently told me that his friends had told him that North Korea is reporting that it has landed a man on the sun. And when my son said, I think you're being misled, they said, no, I mean, that's the kind of things that happen in North Korea. I mean, this is the same kind of phenomenon. You can say anything you want about North Korea or Syria, and people will believe it.
Yes, and then, of course, it has these consequences, because immediately the issue, some people said, well, maybe there shouldn't be a Geneva II talks. Should we be sitting down with these criminals? It seems to be rather cynically designed to give traction to further aggression against Syria, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know if you know this about Mr. Crane. I want to share it with you. Mr. Crane was the one who, when Charles Taylor was the president of Liberia and was engaged in talks with the presidents of Sierra Leone and neighboring countries, he went to Accra, Ghana, at the invitation of the other presidents, to see if they could arrange a peace agreement for the region. And while there, David Crane unsealed an indictment against him and called on the Ghanaian authorities to arrest him.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds, in other words, I'm saying that Mr. Crane has an M.O. of this kind of work.
Yeah.
What is your take on these talks and whether or not they're achieving anything? What did you think of the way Mr. Kerry presented things at the talk with the Syrians?
Well, I mean, it's interesting to think about the way in which the United States presents the talks. As these are talks in which essentially we're going to all agree to achieve U.S. objectives, is to have a transition government which doesn't have Assad as part of it. And so, you know, because Iran doesn't agree with that, they can't be part of the talks.
Yeah, by the way, South Korea was part of the talks, am I right?
So many countries are, I mean, Canada was invited as well.
But Iran cannot be invited.
No.
You know, isn't this a dangerous situation we're getting into, Stephen, with the United Nations behaving in such as just an obedient, like an obedient dog? I mean, the Iran was invited, America barked, and then the smaller figure withdrew the invitation. And then we had this episode where the representative of the sovereign government of Syria is speaking, and the Secretary General interrupts him like he's a child in class and says, you have 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And what are we dealing with?
Yes. He didn't have much success, though, in muting the Syrian foreign minister.
Mm-hmm. One assumes he wouldn't have interrupt Mr. Kerry.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Given all the stresses and strain we're witnessing, I guess, and this will be the last question, and the way the U.S. is trying to hold on to all these international organizations and dictate things, I mean, does it look to you like some of these institutions will break down?
Whether they break down?
Yeah, for example, the UN's ability to get anything done and to be credible. We're going to see some trouble in Eastern Europe, and there seems to be a kind of quality to the way an aggressive attitude of the U.S. It makes one wonder if any these institutions can survive this. I mean, because certainly some of these powers, like China and Russia, do not intend to allow themselves to be run roughshod over, right?
Mm-hmm.
I get the impression that this could be, that the U.S. policy will destroy these institutions.
Yes. Well, certainly. I mean, as the large hegemonic power, they certainly use the institutions to advance their own interests, and when they don't advance their interests, they simply ignore them,
mm-hmm.
or try to twist and shape and manipulate them to serve their interests.
Mm-hmm.
But then the question we can ask is, why is it that so many countries go along and participate?
Mm-hmm. Yes, but with the Syria matter, we seem to almost like cross some kind of Rubicon here, in that the Russians decided to really stand in the way, leading to the quaking in the British Parliament, actually. It is interesting. People thought Obama might take a different tack, but he seems to be back to a very aggressive approach with Poland and Ukraine and these places. He's talking in a way that clearly the Russians are going to say no.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, that's right. And Ukraine is an interesting case, too. Mm-hmm. But I guess you're rapidly running out of time here.
Yes, both us and the situations. Stephen Gowans, we really appreciate it. I think you're right about the Qatar matter, and we look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That's gowans.wordpress.com. And there's no question that this situation in Ukraine has this new element of... if you see John McCain in Kiev standing alongside a liberal senator from Connecticut, and then the a man standing next to them is the leader of something that used to be called the Socialist Nationalist Party of Ukraine, who has been warned about his anti-Semitic remarks and the remarks of his fellow members of his party, you have to worry about what might be unfolding there. You're listening to the Taylor Report. It's CIUT 89.5 FM. And Terry, thank you very much. Phil Conlon, thank you. And of course, we're very proud that we had Faustin Twegeri-Mungu, former Prime Minister of Rwanda, as a guest. We'll see you.